A People's History of Kansas City is brought to you with the support of the Midwest Genealogy Center, which provides resources like African American Biographical Database and American Ancestors to assist in African American family history research. Learn more at mymcpl/genealogy.
What were you like in high school?
I feel like I was kind of shy.
I think I was a nerd, but at the same time, I was like decent at sports.
Bad.
How so?
Mischievous. Always looking to get into things.
High school can be a strange and formative time. Learning new things about the world, yourself, making new friends, exploring your identity, finding out where you fit in and what you like, what kind of person you want to grow up and become. You just heard the voices of three people who attended Lincoln High School in Kansas City. It's now known as Lincoln College Preparatory Academy. Lincoln is a prestigious, historically black school that was founded over 150 years ago. All three of these Lincoln alumni admit that when they were in high school, the history and legacy of their school wasn't necessarily top of mind. But there was a feeling about Lincoln, an identity, that was just kind of understood.
This has always been the school where all the smart black kids come from. Or this has been the school, you know, where you can name check, you know, the Ollie Gates of the world or Lucille Bluford or Frank White, these famous historic black Kansas Citians.
Musicians Charlie Parker and Walter Page, civil rights leaders Leon Jordan and Dr. Julia Hill, and singer Julia Lee.
Cause I've been to Kansas City, that's the blues I gotta lose.
It's interesting, we had an African-American history class at Lincoln, but it wasn't necessarily a class that focused on Lincoln's history.
Aaron Randall graduated from Lincoln in 2007. A self-described nerdy kid who could also hang with the jocks, now a reporter, Aaron says he started hearing some interesting things from friends and people in the community about certain changes that were happening at his former high school.
Some said that it was a totally white school. And then some people said that it seemed a little different. And then some said it didn't seem that different. But at the same time, they could tell that it wasn't a school that they remembered. And so I just was really curious.
Aaron wanted to find out the truth. How much had his high school really changed?
And once I saw actual numbers and actual data that showed that Lincoln was rapidly changing in a drastic way, you know, the black population was declining in a rate that they would be the minority by 2023, I just felt that that was a compelling story, particularly with Lincoln Prep's history as an historically black high school and its connection to the black community.
The story ran on the front page of the Kansas City Star last spring. It was the last big piece Aaron Randall wrote for the Star before leaving for the New York Times. He says it felt like going full circle, having this final story at the paper be about his high school, diving into complex issues all about race, culture, and identity in his home city.
It's about, you know, a community that feels that it already doesn't have much. And so it's like they feel like they're losing a big weapon in their arsenal, so to speak, right? Like they're losing a major gem.
This is A People's History of Kansas City, a podcast from KCUR 89.3. I'm Suzanne Hogan.
You can't stop time.
You know, you're like, man, why did not I know that before? This is my history.
There's value in having that story that you pass on that, oh, I was part of this larger thing.
On this episode, the history of Lincoln College Preparatory Academy. We're going to explore how this institution, this major gem, shaped Kansas City. How has it changed over the years? Why has it changed? And what's being done to make sure that the school's legacy is being preserved and passed on to future generations? We'll hear more from Aaron Randall and his reporting a little bit later, but first, let's just dive into it. Even some alumni I talked to admitted that they really didn't fully learn about Lincoln's history until they got older and researched it for themselves. And just to put it out there, I didn't go to Lincoln. I had some friends who went there, but I also didn't know anything about its backstory until I got into radio and started researching black history in Kansas City.
Kansas City, like most cities, education was segregated from the very beginning.
Mike Sweeney is with the State Historical Society of Missouri. He previously worked for the Black Archives. He serves as the official historian for Lincoln's Alumni Association. He's a white guy who's passionate about Lincoln's story and the impact it's had on developing our city.
It's a history of business leaders and educators and religious leaders and, you know, community, the story of community.
So it all started at a church at what's now 10th and McGee at the end of the Civil War.
Previous to this, during the Civil War, of course, it was against the law to educate blacks.
Even so, during that time, there are numerous accounts of people defying that law, mainly church groups who were pushing for African-American education and abolition. For example, this black pastor in St. Louis, John Barry Meacham, helped found one of the oldest black churches in Missouri, and he made a floating freedom school. Since educating black people was illegal, he moved his classroom to a steamboat on the Mississippi River, which was outside of the reach of Missouri law. So the Civil War ended in 1865, and it's then that Missouri adopts a new constitution. It, among many other things, banned slavery and created free public schools for all young people. But the schools were to be segregated. So back to Lincoln. Around the time when the Civil War ends, in Kansas City, a black pastor named Reverend Copeland and his wife started offering educational opportunities at their church.
It was really just to educate the black populace, not just children, adults, anybody, but in basic skills necessary for just being citizens.
In 1867, the Kansas City School District comes into existence. Those students and educators officially became Lincoln Elementary and part of the district. Missouri law basically said that if you had enough of a black population, you had to provide education. But if you didn't, then you didn't. So a lot of black students from lesser populated areas commuted to or even moved so they could attend Lincoln. They came from places like Westport, St. Joseph, Independence, and lots of other smaller towns. Lincoln eventually moved to 11th and Campbell and expanded into a high school in 1890.
See if I can actually maybe even find you this map really quickly.
Mike Sweeney shows me a map and some old pictures of that area, which at the end of the 1800s used to be a focal point of the black community. Today, those buildings are gone. It's right where Highway 70 meets 71. As we enter the 20th century, Kansas City's black population is booming, along with the overall population. And the schools were trying to accommodate all the new students coming in. The district built a new school, but even then, it very quickly became clear that Lincoln needed an even bigger facility. Keep in mind, up until 1954, Lincoln High School was the only place in Jackson, Platt, and Clay counties where an African-American student could receive secondary education, which is where one of historian Mike Sweeney's heroes comes along, Principal H.O. Cook.
Particularly those early principals really capture this whole idea that in Kansas City, we had nationally known African-American figures living here, nationally engaged folks.
Cook grew up in a well-to-do family on the East Coast and moved to Kansas City in the early 1900s. He served as Lincoln High School's principal from 1921 to 1943. It was the Great Depression, but Principal Cook rallied the black community and raised funds. And in 1936, the new Lincoln High School at 20th and Woodland opened up its doors. It became known as the Castle on the Hill. The four-story brick building had an eye-catching lookout tower. The new facility had a swimming pool, updated science labs, two gyms, and a two-story auditorium. On top of running this brand new school, Principal Cook was a central figure in the black community.
I got interested in him when I was working at the Black Archives because I kept seeing his name pop up everywhere.
At the height of Jim Crow laws and in the midst of racial discrimination in the city, Cook tackled community health, black economic independence, and he was part of the early years of Kansas City's NAACP chapter.
It's part of this larger thing about racial uplift.
The school attracted other nationally renowned black educators who were also involved in the community, teachers of major university caliber, people like Harlem Renaissance artist Aaron Douglas, jazz band leader Nathaniel Clark Smith. The first high school building, which had been near 18th and Vine, became R.T. Cole's vocational school. There, people could learn different skills that could help them get better jobs. And the new school, the Castle on the Hill, became a focal point of African-American higher education in the city. It offered night school for adults. It was always hosting different community events and meetings. Lincoln Junior College was on the top floor. Ronald Walton went to R.T. Cole's vocational school and then graduated from Lincoln High School in 1954.
We felt we had everything in our community that we needed.
That year that Ron graduated, 1954, was the year of Brown versus Topeka Board of Education, the Supreme Court case that was supposed to end segregated public schools. But Ron says, as a young man, the significance of that Supreme Court case didn't register with him at first.
Because the environment that we had grown up in and what I had been accustomed to, I think my feeling was, well, big deal. We don't need those schools. We've got our schools.
The way Ron remembers it, the stretch from Independence to 27th Street, Truce to as far east as Mercington, was a segregated, tight-knit Black community where folks took care of each other. Ron says lots of families would let Lincoln students commuting from far away stay with them throughout the week. Ron understands that things have changed. It's not that he wants to go backwards. It's just that he's proud of how the Black community fought discrimination and all the things they built and accomplished in those days.
You can't stop time. If you could stop time and put that particular aspect of life as I knew it, that would be the perfect scenario. You would have Lincoln, Coles, the Black community, the closeness, all of those things that living in that situation brought about, whether you liked it or not.
Ron says it was that closeness that helped him out in his formative years.
My youth was kind of rough. I was a scoundrel, mischievous, bad. I was always being counseled and told, you from a good family, why is it that you don't do what we know you can do? That all resonates with me today, and I pass that on to my children.
His senior year, he almost dropped out, but he says it was that community and the faculty at Lincoln that helped him get his act together so he could graduate. Ron opens up his senior yearbook as I try to guess which picture is his.
Okay, I'll get the page for you and you see if you can locate me.
Is that you? Yeah, I could see it. Of course.
That diploma and the education Ron got from Lincoln 66 years ago is something he says he will forever be proud of. He's now the president of the Lincoln R.T. Coles National Alumni Association. It's a group that provides scholarships for Lincoln students. They also organized to get a plaque put up at the old R.T. Coles site near 18th and Vine, where the vocational school had been knocked down. Ron says now that he's in his 80s, it feels really important to him to make sure the history of these places is not forgotten.
This is my main purpose.
That Supreme Court decision to integrate schools in 1954 started a very, very slow movement that could culminate in 2023, the year Lincoln is projected to no longer be a majority Black school. It's a forecast that really bothers Ron.
That's the conflict. I understand that things change, and to keep Lincoln as it was in the 50s when I went there would be ridiculous. But I'm not completely satisfied with the changes and what I see from my point of view that it's producing.
After Brown versus Board, the Kansas City District was ordered to integrate, quote, as quickly as possible. But neighborhoods stayed segregated because of white flight and discriminatory housing practices like redlining. And lax transfer policies in the district tended to favor white students.
The integration, I think it was intended to do well, but the way it turned out, I would like to have a do-over.
In the late 1970s, over 20 years after Brown versus Board, the Kansas City Public School District was still mostly racially segregated. It took nearly a quarter of a century after the case for Lincoln to officially open up for integration. Because Kansas City schools were still so segregated, a new mandated plan was put in place intended to, quote, wipe out segregation. The new plan boosted teachers' salaries and created state-of-the-art magnet schools. The idea was that it would draw more white families into the mostly Black district. Lincoln became one of those magnet schools, and academic requirements changed for incoming students, meaning you had to take an exam and have a minimum GPA to attend. Nicole Puryear was a senior at Lincoln the year they started enforcing the minimum GPA requirements.
It was really sad because I know at some point we realized that some of our classmates were not coming back.
Nicole says more than 50 of her classmates had to transfer to their neighborhood schools. More than any other high school in the district, Lincoln saw an increase in diversity as a result of the magnet school plan. When Nicole graduated in 1986, the school was still mostly Black. But by the time her own kids went to Lincoln in the early 2000s, the student body and the teaching staff had become more white.
Some of the culture was a little bit different.
Nicole, now an educator herself, remembers having a lot of the same Black teachers all throughout her high school days. She thinks staff turnover was part of why Lincoln just felt different when her kids went there.
You don't realize how easy it is for things to kind of disappear, and it doesn't really take that long for, you know, knowledge to kind of fade away.
A fellow alumni told Nicole a story that highlighted that very point. A few years ago, a large alumni group went to the high school to see a student performance. And afterwards, one of the students, who is Black, went up to the alumni group and asked a startling question.
Why is everybody Black? And he's like, and he had to explain to her, you know, the history of Lincoln. And she was like, oh, I didn't know. I can't believe I didn't know that. And I think she was a little hurt.
Nicole is now actively involved with the Alumni Association, with Ron. She admits even she could have done a better job of educating her own kids about the history of Lincoln. But now she's part of the next generation of alumni who are trying to make sure every Lincoln student knows its backstory.
Even as an adult, when you learn these obscure or different things in, about Black history that, you know, you're like, man, why didn't I know that before? This is my history.
66 years after Brown v. Board, our nation's public schools still struggle with economic and racial segregation. In Kansas City, where 60% of the city identifies as white, white enrollment in the district is still only 10%. But when you look at Lincoln, it kind of shines as this beacon of diversity, with 40% of the student body identifying as Black, about 20% as white, and 30% as Latino. But with Black enrollment dropping at the school, what does this historic incubator of Black excellence risk to lose as it becomes more diverse? Which brings us back to where we started, Lincoln alum and newspaper reporter Aaron Randall and his article that came out last May. The headline was, Lincoln Prep soon may no longer be majority Black. Is that a sign of loss or progress?
Okay, well, why is this thing happening?
Randall's report said that for the past 5 years, Lincoln's Black enrollment has been dropping 3 percentage points on average.
Some of the misinformation out there was the district was kind of targeting white students, or, you know, there were concentrated efforts to keep Black students out. And in my reporting, at least, I did not find that.
My conversations with the district also confirmed that. There are no concerted efforts to recruit only white students or to keep Black students out. The district and administrators at Lincoln say they work hard to recruit students from throughout the city. They say that what's happening at Lincoln reflects some of the bigger demographic shifts that are just happening throughout the city.
I found that a big piece of the puzzle was the fact that Blacks are suburbanizing in Kansas City. They're moving to the suburbs at a constantly rising rate. And that's been happening since I was in, you know, high school. I've seen, you know, lots of even my family members who have lived in the city their whole lives. They live in the Lee Summits and the Blue Springs and all these different suburbs.
Black enrollment in suburban districts like Blue Springs and Lee Summit has increased. According to the Mid-America Regional Council, Kansas City's urban core is seeing a drop in the Black population, while historically Black neighborhoods are seeing more Latino and affluent white families move in.
I mean, look right down the street from Lincoln Prep in the historic Beacon Hill community. You know, that community that's always been historically Black is now quite diverse.
At Lincoln, in the past 10 years, the white population has been around 15%. The most drastic change has been in the Latino population, which has doubled. If it continues at its current rate, Lincoln's Latino population will surpass the Black population by 2023. Lincoln is becoming more brown.
I don't think necessarily that the answer here is to stop the diversification of Lincoln Prep, right? Like, it's not about keeping white or Hispanic kids out or somehow unfairly boosting the amount of Black kids. I think what this gets, what this at its core is about, this story and this narrative, is the Black community and their fear of losing a cultural marker, their cultural identity.
Aaron says it also gets at our city's complicated relationship with race.
It has such a fraught racial tension.
And it's a tension that goes beyond race and culture.
And really of other things, you know, of power dynamics and of wealth, of geography. Like, there are many different intersections of that city that I think people have never really fully engaged and try to understand.
After Lincoln, Aaron ended up going to Howard University, a historically Black college. There, he says, they made sure every student who attends knows the history and background of the school. He says he'd like to see Lincoln take a similar approach.
I think that it would be a disservice to not only the school, but the city and the students if they don't do that.
Our historian earlier touched on this, too. Lincoln, as in the building, is a protected historic site, but it's also a functioning high school. In a city where few African-American historic sites remain, beyond those centered around jazz and baseball, and as the city and historically Black neighborhoods are changing, Aaron Randall, Mike Sweeney, Ronald Walton, and Nicole Perrier want to know what is going to be done to make sure students know Lincoln's history, no matter what the racial demographic of the student body or faculty is.
We are taking those steps to make sure that kids understand how special this place is.
Christian Foster has been the principal here for 3 years. She was previously at Sumner High School in Kansas City, Kansas, another historically Black school that shares a lot of history with Lincoln, but we'll have to save that story for another episode. Christian, who is white, is also a mother to a Lincoln alumni. She, of course, read Aaron's article and says maintaining Lincoln's academic excellence and rigor while preserving the history of the school is front of mind. On top of having new students watch a student-made video that tells Lincoln's story, she's been working with the Alumni Association to revamp the alumni room.
My involvement has just been one of support and, you know, advocating in any way that I can to make sure that that space is preserved in a piece of history that people can view.
And another student-led project is underway.
These are the theater doors right here.
And behind you actually was the old ticket booth.
Over the years, the front entryway to the auditorium had become a storage area for different school supplies. But these Lincoln seniors had an idea. Their plan was to completely clean out the entryway and spruce it up. They want it to be a welcome gathering place, like it used to be. They also plan to paint a mural that will include different aspects of Lincoln's history. It's a history some of them admit they just learned about last year.
I was really shocked when I found out because I'm like, that's something that should be known. That's something that our student body should know and like should be proud of.
Michelle Saul is one of the seniors working on the front hallway project. She wants to be a lawyer. Let's meet some of the other students from the class of 2020.
My name's Solandra Torres. I do know I want to go into physical therapy or double major in nursing and Spanish so I could become a translator in the hospitals.
My name's Madeline Solder. I do plan on studying abroad to practice my French or Spanish and just see where that takes me.
My name's Asada Jahad. I plan to major in mass communications while I start my pre-med track. And then after, I plan to go to med school and become a podiatrist and go back to Africa, where my family is from, and open a nonprofit for podiatry because feet are important in Africa. A lot of people carry their lives on bare feet, which can obviously become a problem.
How long have you known that that's your plan?
2 months ago.
Oh, okay. And then there's Anthony Moses, who has accepted a full ride to MU and wants to major in biology.
Right now, it's really to just focus on finishing this year and then just striving on like what is in the present, not so much as what's in the future.
I'm like excited about the future, knowing that you guys are going to be in charge. And what about senioritis?
Oh, senioritis, I have that.
It's freshman year.
It's a real thing.
It's a real thing.
Yes.
But we're going to fight through it, right?
Yeah, of course, yeah. You got to finish strong.
Yeah.
This group of seniors is ambitious. They still have a lot to do before they graduate in May. They also read Aaron Randall's article last year and say it made the hallway project feel more important and urgent. Michelle Saul says she wants to leave a legacy and honor the history of this place because it's been such an important part of her story.
I was used to like moving schools like almost like every 2 years. I was in a new school, new country, you know, things like that. And then I never felt like I truly like belonged. I had like a real space that I could say like, oh, this is like my space, you know? And like I felt that at Lincoln because like I was able to find just like a diverse group of friends, and then we just all clicked since I came here, and then we just became a family, you know? And like 10 years from now, where you go, I'm like, yeah, I'm from Lincoln, blah, 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 in Kansas City, you know, it's something proud.
It is something to be proud of. The school has been a historic incubator of Black excellence, and the effects of that excellence can be seen in the ripple down and all the amazing accomplishments its alumni have gone on to achieve. Even though the city and the school's demographics are changing, Lincoln continues to be a place that's producing brilliant young minds. But is every student in the city, regardless of their race, background, or ability to qualify, receiving quality education without discrimination? Are communities who are more disenfranchised getting the same amount of academic and community support that they need in order to succeed? What was lost when Black students were no longer taught primarily by Black teachers? These are the types of questions that plague educators and policymakers, and really all of us who are concerned about equality and encouraging the next generation of leaders. We need to make sure that these stories, like the story of Lincoln, become part of our curriculum, part of how we talk about the history of our city and how we got to where we are today. We need to know and appreciate how hard people fought to make this beacon of Kansas City Black history something we are all proud to be a part of today. A People's History of Kansas City is a production from KCUR 89.3, made possible with the support of the Midwest Genealogy Center, which can help you learn more about the history of Kansas City through a searchable version of the Kansas City Star dating back to 1880. Learn more at mymcpl/genealogy. We'd love to hear from you. Are you a Lincoln alumni? Do you have a story about integration in the city? Something you think people should know? We want to hear about it. I'm not on Twitter or anything, so you got to send it the old-fashioned way. An email, peopleshistorykc@kcur.org. That's peopleshistorykc@kcur.org, or you can give us a call and leave a message. The number is 816-235-8930. That's 816-235-8930. Our team is made up of Sylvia Maria Gross, Mike Russo, Matthew Long Middleton, Salisa Kalakal, and Ann Kniggendorf. We also had help from CJ Janovi, Cody Newell, Tracy Bauer, Ellie Moxley, and Michelle Tyreen Johnson. Our theme music is from Primary Color, and we had some other music from Circus Marcus. I'm Suzanne Hogan. Take care, and thanks for listening.